Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Our guest this week, former ATP pro and coach of both Noah Rubin, and at times working with Nick Kyrgios, Philip Simmons.
You were with me during my first main draw Grand Slam win in Australia against Benoit Paire. You know, you traveled with me. We did a lot together. And honestly, learning, maybe I think you've learned from your mistakes a little bit and helped me in the process of that, which I really appreciate. And I'm sorry it had to be at kind of your expense in the beginning, but
generally how it goes. So it's at somebody's expense. So, you know.
But how have you, through everything, had this positive outlook where maybe it has, your life has taken different paths than you might have wanted to? Or, and you know, I think a lot of people, you know, you could use the word lazy, but it could just, I think people use the word lazy because they see so much talent. I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
And they see you, whether it's coaching or freaking DJing or whatever it is, like, this guy can make it in that. So when they say lazy, they're just like, they put the bar so high. But how has life been for you since tennis and getting into coaching and helping guys like me? How, what kind of experience does that feel like?
I mean, it's been rewarding just because I can kind of fill in those holes and gaps that I don't think that I necessarily had. And that's not a knock on anybody that really worked with me. It's just there are things that, you know, weren't communicated to me as a young man that if they were communicated to me a little bit better, I might have taken a different approach and maybe done things a little bit, you know, in a better light that people might have respected more and might have not called me lazy, you know. So because obviously, you know, when you're talented, people expect a lot of things from you. It's a gift and a curse. Like, you know, I still feel pretty good about the fact that I went out and tried, you know, coming from Long Island. It's not something where, like, it's a, you know, it's a thing. Like, growing up in New York and my parents are Jamaican, we're immigrants, like, Bronx, moving to Long Island and so on and so forth. Like, yeah, I wish I could have been top 10 in the world. Who doesn't? But, you know, I had a hip injury. There's somebody that I cared about that passed away in a car accident. Like, there were things that happened, real life things. And, those are things that, like, I can't prepare for by running a 400, you know, or, like, emotionally that you can really get ready for and, you know, say, okay, well, this person's going to pass away or you're going to go through an injury and you're going to be pretty depressed or sad for 8, 9, 10 months, you know, and you're not going to have anybody to communicate with because you're a black kid and guess what? There's not that many black kids out there. So I can call up Gail, but Gail's top 20 in the world. Like, what am I going to call my other friends that are, you know, not playing tennis that are in the NFL that are having success or – you know, there's a spectrum of athletes and people that you can reach out to, but unless they're actually doing what you're doing, it's really, really difficult to kind of feel what the situation is and kind of feel the current that's going on. So, you know, I see some talented kids. I mean, people say the same thing about Nick all the time, like on a much bigger scale, right? Like he has all of these things and da da da. And it's like people go through things, you know, like people are actual human beings. So I don't mind. I'm fine with it.
You mentioned Scoville Jenkins earlier, a guy who came up through the ranks with you. You mentioned Nick Kyrgios here. Nick is a little bit different, coming from Australia, whereas you and Scoville Jenkins, a couple of guys who are African American. How do you think, in terms of the realization of what it means to be a black athlete in the U.S., how do you think that plays out in the U.S. versus Nick, who has been obviously a guy who's had to deal with a lot as one of the top players out of Australia? How do you balance that, the U.S. versus Australian, I don't know what necessarily the right word is, but how you guys came up, how you guys dealt with that, being an African-American versus an Australian who has dealt with certainly some racist issues down in Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you could really compare the two. I mean, like, I'm not really sure what Nick's experiences were in terms of, like, race. I can only speak for, like, what I went through and Sko went through. I know Dustin still goes through it. Mm-hmm. Gail still goes through it. I know Jameer will get hate messages. He's just working with Serena. So, I mean, like, these are things that happen, you know, and there's no control over it. I mean, we do the best that we can. We play a predominantly white sport where, you know, magnifying glasses on you because you're black, but it's even more so. So it's a tough situation. But I mean, for Nick, I mean, he's got the whole country pretty much on his back. They're a tennis country, so it's a whole different. It'd almost be like if he was from England, you know, like it's a different world, you know, like we're not in the upper tier of sports in the States. So it was a different experience. It was maybe even a little bit more hurtful and tough just because the bubble is so small. So you're almost looking around like, was it you? You know, like who's doing this? Like who's allowing this to kind of go on? And, you know, it's tough when you get in situations and you feel like there are people that should be sticking up for you or kind of seeing what's going on. And, you know, they kind of turn their back in their own self-interest. So it's part of growth, as they say.
You know, I've started Behind the Racket to kind of at least get the conversation going, but this hasn't gone into race or gender equality, whatever the case may be. But, you know, did you feel both, I mean, two questions. One, did you feel this pressure to be a success story? You know, that feeling of, you know, I don't even know why it's still a thing, is as a black American, I have to come up, I have to be that guy.
Of course.
And then also on top of that, you talked about not having other people around you to talk to, you know. Still at this point in time, do you feel like you can't share your experiences, let's say, with even somebody like me?
Not necessarily. I mean, can you go back? What was the first question again? I was thinking about the second
one. No, good. Never good to ask two questions. But the idea of being a success story and that pressure.
Yeah. That definitely was a thing because you see the other guys. There was Malavia Washington, Phil Williamson, LeVar, Harper Griffin, James. You know, James took me under his wing, was super nice to me, let me live with him at Saddlebrook. There was all these people that did all these things for me, or I felt like they were doing all these things for me, and I wanted to do it for them, you know? And you put a lot of added pressure on yourself. Obviously, you feel that every year when you play in New York, that you want to show up, and you want to show up for the people that care for you most. So I think everybody deals with that pressure. I think it might be magnified again because you want to be the one that kind of breaks the seal. You want to be the Serena of the men's side, right? Like Serena's killing it. And you're just like, damn, I wish I could go out and beat Roger at Wimby and just be like, yo, here I am. Like, and then open the floodgates for all of these African-American tennis players, right? Like that's the ideal. That's what everybody wants to do. But it's tough, man. Like situations happen where you're playing a 128 draw and there's three black kids in the same section. And you're kind of like, wait a second. Let me run those numbers and see if there's a probability of this happening, you know? So there are hurdles that you can't really address. There are things that you can't really say that suck, quite frankly, but you know, they are part of kind of this game to try to get to where you want to get to kind of open these roads for these people. I mean, I don't want to say Coco's got it easy, but like, man, Serena did a pretty good job, like laying it out. Serena and Venus, you know, Althea Gibson, like there's a bunch of people that came before. Now Coco can step in and really own her spotlight without feeling like she's trying to catch up to any of the other women because they've done it already. So she can be herself. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
This is a pretty unique time in the U.S. You're talking to two like white guys, one old, one younger, who you've known certainly with Noah quite some time. We're at a point where the African Americans within our generations, if you will, I'm 43, Noah's 25, are looking at these opportunities here to really grow and kind of develop the African American structure within the sport of tennis. How do you think your experience within tennis has really differed or been different from people who have just, you know, never necessarily been within the sport of tennis? How do you think, if you will, racism is different within tennis versus how African Americans experience life?
It's just magnified, right? Mm. Like, I can walk on a street, you know, on a normal day in America, and you can feel it, but you won't feel it the same way as if you're at a tournament and you go into your hotel and you have your tennis bag and somebody takes a step towards you, to go in the elevator, and they decide not to get in, right? Or they won't let you into your hotel because they don't think you're staying there. So there's a difference, because tennis is one of those sports where it's at the 1-3%, you know, where it's a lot of wealth in it, similar to golf, cricket, horseback riding, whatever the case may be. And it's, you know, there's money in it. And when there's generally a situation in a structure where there's money involved, especially at those upper tiers, there's not a great number of African Americans involved. So just a little magnified.
You know, obviously, there's a lot of people talking about the world issues right now. We're talking about tennis because, you know, we're trying to do our part. You know, that's kind of what it is, and we want to be a part of it. And Evan, I've spoken to him many times, and I'm making fun of him for traveling to Uzbekistan, to Mexico, and I'm like, what are you doing? And, you know, he's opened up and he's laughed, but not until his recent story, when he basically said he felt safer in Uzbekistan than he did walking down the streets in the U.S. Do you think, on a smaller scale, which is tennis, do you think, you know, we're going to have these talks where, you know, it's a must? Do you find yourself getting involved with them? Is this something, I mean, at such a smaller scale, you talk about anti-Semitism, which we don't deal with it because we're white, you know, we don't have the same feeling. But then you talk about, you know, when is this conversation come in tennis? When does it happen and say, hey, we have to get this going and we have to support each other?
I mean, you would hope that it happens soon, right? Like, with everything.
Is this the time?
I mean, there's no better time than right now. You would have thought it would have happened when, like, Arthur Ashe was around, like Muhammad Ali and, like, guys like that, when things were really kind of opening up. But again, like, there was no access. So there's not a large amount of African Americans kind of like putting their imprint on the sports. So now more than ever, I mean, you got Francis doing great. Coco's obviously doing great. You still have Serena kind of leading the forefront. I saw her interview, I think, or whatever she was doing with Alexis yesterday, which was awesome. Alexio. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Ohanian?
Her husband?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to pronounce it right. But yeah, so, you know, you watch those interviews and you kind of see these conversations happening, and it's encouraging. It's definitely encouraging, but, you know, it shouldn't take, you know, all of this just for basic human rights to kind of be looked at and be like, oh, maybe we're not doing that right. Or, you know, we have all these killings taking place, but it's like there's still a generation of kids that are being poisoned in Flint, Michigan, you know? So there's all these things that are still going on, and it's like, when can we get past this? Because honestly, like, you're limiting a portion of the population's intelligence. It's the same thing when they were doing this with women. Like, how are we going to move on as a society if you're omitting half of the intelligence on the planet? So it's like, got to bring it together in some way so we can kind of move forward. But it's got to be a conversation happening sooner than later.
So how do you balance that as someone who has gone through it as a player? You certainly see Coco, you certainly see Francis, you see Serena, players who have been ranked higher than you. If you had a 17, 18-year-old African-American who came to you and said, how do I traverse this path right now as an African-American trying to find my way within the sport of tennis, what would you say to them?
I mean, I would say the same thing to everybody. I would say stay close to yourself, honestly, because it's so difficult, right? Like, you're in a system where you're traveling. Most kids at that age aren't on the road that much, you know, coming out of juniors. So I would say, you know, 2-3 weeks on the road tops, you know, make sure that you get home enough so that you remember who you are. You don't really lose your roots, because a lot of the confidence that you've gained throughout your career has come from your home. And just the stability and knowing who you are. And I mean, that's what it is in crunch time, right? When it's 4-all in the third break point, it's like, all right, what am I doing? And it's not that voice where it's like, oh, I'm a little bit nervous. It's like, all right, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think if you're away from home or you're away from your training ground and you're out for 3 to 5 weeks at a time, it's tough unless you've got your whole team with you, 3-4 guys, which most people can't afford. And you're kicking up in luxury. So
not just me and Phil out there.
So, you know, a couple weeks here, a couple weeks back to kind of get grounded. And then you go back out, because it's not just the tennis, it's the traveling, the eating, the languages, the stress of just being there. And you're trying to get to where your dreams are. So it's difficult.
You know, and you know, obviously we're talking about this because we want to learn. We want other people to learn and educate themselves. But what are you feeling right now during everything? Where is the next step for you? Do you reach out to young kids coming up? Is that a part of it? Are you out there? What is the next step and what does it look like?
I feel awful with what's going on right now. I don't think anybody feels good about it. It's just like, it's almost like this plea, you know, it's like, pay attention to us. So it's not a great feeling, because I mean, look, you got the NBA is whatever percent black it is. You got the NFL, and it's like, you guys see us on TV all the time. Like, why there and like not in real life? So yeah, it sucks. Nobody feels good about it. If there are kids coming up, like, what do? You just try to educate them, right? Like, you try to form a system where you can educate them to let them know that they're not just slaves or whatever the narratives that they think, you know, coming out of middle school and high school, and just build them up so when they go out, you know, they could walk around with their head held high instead of feeling like they're, you know, the bottom of the totem pole for doing nothing, you know, just for existing. So
what would you change about your path to becoming a professional and now to becoming a coach, if you will?
If I could change anything,
obviously more time spent with me.
Definitely more time
with Noah. probably what I'd say, what I just said, just kind of get back home a little bit more, honestly. I think I spent a lot of time in Florida because, you know, coming from the Northeast, you always feel like you have to catch up. You're like, man, like, there are all these kids that have been training in Florida, California, the guys over in Europe that have been going to academies. I mean, if you could hear the horror stories that we got from, like, what the Spaniards were doing, what Rafa was doing, and, like, what Richard's doing over there, and, like, how far behind we were, and, like, it's like, oh, man, I got to go, like, 6 hours, there's something I got to do. And just an anxiety that you kind of put on yourself, it's like, it's really unnecessary at the end of the day, because you got to play, so...
Yeah, I mean, I look at you, and again, saying I've learned from you is an understatement. I mean, we've spent a lot of time together, whether just as friends or the, you know, coach student. But you look at tennis, you look at the place it is now, take our politics out of it. Where is tennis ending up? You know, what does it mean to you first? And then where will tennis end up in 5 years from now? We don't have Big Three anymore. We don't have Serena. Where does this all go?
I don't know, man.
That's a great question, Noah.
It's going to be difficult. I mean, I thought they had something good going on with Laver Cup, right? I thought it's a really great thing to see these guys in a natural environment. We're social beings. Everybody's having a good time. If you can kind of bring that over a generalized landscape and make it big for everyone so that you can have 150 people, something like that, get involved or like spread it out. I don't know, whatever. Some type of team event. I don't want to say you're going to have to restructure the sport, but it's, I mean, we're struggling to fill stands right now. So, you know, we might have to do a few things. I mean, I know, and I have talked about, like, you know, team events where you have 10 guys per team and or something like that, and you have everybody playing to try to get into a draft format and you kind of shuffle it out that way. And, you know, you travel around and you promote the game that way in different continents. But, again, it's – it's an old structure, and it's a discussion that has to happen with the people and the forefathers of this game, and whether they're going to be okay with that, I don't know. I mean, we're just getting to, like, getting out of Super Breaker, so John doesn't have to go 70-68 to win a match, you know? So I don't know if they're going to restructure the whole sport right now, but I hope those guys play a little bit longer so it gives the younger guys some time to mature and, you know, give them a platform so that they can kind of step into themselves. So when the game's handed over, you know, they can represent the game appropriately.
You have been inside the box for Nick Kyrgios, a guy for a lot of the younger fans of the sport. It's kind of this, you know, entertainment value versus, if you quote, the old school values of tennis. How have you advised him? How have you seen him grow? And how do you balance that kind of dichotomy? The idea of the growth of the sport in tennis when it comes to somebody like Nick Kyrgios, who can really take it to a different level versus, I guess, if you will, the old school values of tennis.
I mean, there's a few guys I think that fall into that category, right? Like Nick, Jack, like these guys are extremely, like, crazy talented, right? And just kind of get lost in the shuffle because they can do so many things, right? Like, they're pretty articulate, you know, good tennis players, great on camera. I mean, there's a lot of things that they have going for themselves. So when there's this, I don't want to say this stagnant period for them, it kind of, I don't want to say it takes the joy out of it, but they're kind of like, where am I? You know, like, why aren't I with my friends, or why aren't I, like, why isn't this more fun? So you just try to give them an opportunity, or, you know, present the game as like, yo, you're an athlete before you're a tennis player. Or I've told that to Noah a bunch of times, like, we're on the court and it's like, dude, you are lightning. Like, let's talk about how fast you are instead of forehands and backhands, you know? So just trying to change the overall perspective, give the game a different lens so that, you know, they don't see it as like day in, day out, the grind. Because after a while, that's all you hear about guys talking about. It's like, oh, this is such a grind. It's like, dude, let's go to a museum. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go do something else. Let's go. You obviously, you know, Nick loves fitness, playing basketball. That's his thing. So yeah, let's go shoot hoops. Jack's a ridiculous golfer, so it's like, let him go play some golf, you know? Like, these are things that you have to kind of put into the system in order to keep everybody sane, because if not, like, it's just like everybody else, day in, day out, it's not the best thing in the world to do.
Yeah, I mean, take it back one more time, and I think it's just super important for people to understand. I mean, this is something I'm learning about right now, is this whole idea of not having a plan B. Mm-hmm. This whole idea of, hey, if you put your eggs in any other basket besides tennis, you're going to fail. And I think, you know, we've learned it where, you know, my best moments in tennis have been when you and I have fun. And my best moments have been, you know, when I am enjoying myself and getting out there and I have some time at home. You know, you've obviously coached players almost at all levels at this point.
Yeah.
You know, you have one piece of advice. Is it the fact that they have to find who they are as people first?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got 20,000 people watching you in a stadium, right? Like, if you don't know which shoe you're going to tie first, like, it's going to be tough to go out there and, like, build a pattern of kick serve, backhand line, come in, knock up, you know? Like, you can't talk to or think about those things. So it's really, like, start to learn about yourself, start to explore your mind, learn what makes you tick. Because at the end of the day, that's all the other person on the other side of the net is trying to do, is just try to make you tick in the wrong direction. So it's like, how can I keep this positive kind of outlook over an extended period of time? And nobody's perfect. You're going to have terrible days. Like, everybody has terrible days, especially when you're 5,000 miles away from home. But limit them. Limit them the best you can. And, you know, that's all you can do.
Hawaii, deep.
You know? So, you know, you're not feeling like you want to be – you're in Hawaii, but you don't want to be there.
No. Like, after Australia, you're playing
– got to play a Chally. Are you kidding me? Let's go cliff diving. I can't. I want to go hang out with the sea turtles. And I'm just like, they will bite you. Stay away.
We saw sea turtles.
Oh, my God. Like, he wants to go see sea turtles. So we go see sea turtles after we go cliff diving.
And after I go three with, like, number six on University of Hawaii.
And he's losing it.
Hawaii Pacific. Like, let me just say Hawaii Pacific. That's
yeah, he's losing it. So, like, I got to go in the water. And it's just like, he sees sea turtles and he just starts swimming to them like they're not wild animals. And he's like, you're vegetarian, blah. And I was like, yeah, until you get close enough. And then and everybody turned into a carnivore when you get close enough. So it's like, it's really that. It's really, that's a perfect situation. You have a tremendous amount of success. Like, things blow up. Like, you can't wait to get back home to, like, hop in this world. And it's like, bro, we got one more week to handle. And you're like, no, no. And it's like, you got one more week. You can go home after, you know? So it's trying to keep that mentality on the train track. So
when you and I interacted on a relatively normal basis was when you were 23, 24 years of age, Philip. Mm-hmm. Your last, I guess, if you will, full season was in 2012, when you were 25, 26 years of age. I'm looking at the ATP page right now. So
I'm thinking, yeah. Remember what happened in 2014?
you played a couple of matches back in 2015, but your last, if you quote unquote, real match was the Champagne Challenger. I was mm-hmm. there for 2012. You lost in first round qualifying to Daniel Wynn.
Was that a set and a break?
I'll take your word for it. You lost in three.
Lost in three. Ooh,
six,
like that.
Six, like three.
That, Still got it.
I remember just thinking to myself, this is a guy who's got that next level capability. How do you talk to young players now? You have you and I follow you on social media. It's been 8 years really since you were at that point in your career, in your life. How have you changed? How have your interactions with young people changed? Where are you at now as a person versus where you were at 7.5, 8 years ago?
I was quiet back then.
You were. That is absolutely true.
I was very, very quiet, very shelled, wasn't very sure, honestly, what was going on.
Like, I almost wish I saw that time.
I mean, the only thing I knew was tennis. Honestly, yeah. It was just like, okay, well, I got to get ready to play this match, not understanding what I was feeling, what I was going through, where I was most of the time. Like, I was just on a plane with my hood on, taking Tylenol PM so I can get to sleep and wake up, and hopefully I felt like good enough to get my body ready to go play. Mm-hmm. And now it's a different human being, I would say. Like, I think everybody grows and changes, but I think the biggest thing that I contribute, I'd want to say, is that I speak to the kids that I'm working with, or speak to the people that I'm working with instead of speaking at them. And I think that was one of the things that I kind of struggled with when I was younger. I had a few people that I felt spoke to me instead of speaking at me. And I think that's a huge thing, because you have to understand what the other side of the coin is, right? Like, you can't just dictate the conversation all the time. So there's got to be a little bit of give and take. There's got to be some compromise, like any relationship that you're in. And you have to understand. If you care, you try to understand. And the players feel that. Like, anybody that actually cares about you when you're playing tennis, you know, because it's so far and few between. So it's a very enriching feeling when you have that, and it's organic. So, you know, that's what I try to do. I just try to really be as organic and as natural as I can with them, and let them know that this is a person-to-person interaction first before a coach-student interaction. So if you have a terrible day at school, let me know.
As someone who is trying to grow outside of the sport of tennis here, myself, mm-hmm. again, 43 years of age, and I'm trying to listen as much as possible in this moment, what would you say to people? I followed your social media. So many people are out protesting right now. As somebody who's a father of a 5-year-old child, what are those moments? What are those most important things that you can say to somebody? In my perspective, how would you encourage people to grow right now?
Listen to your kids. Mm. Listen to your kids, because parents don't do that. And most of the time, a lot of the things that kids do are just receipts from what their parents are doing, from what their parents say. So hate and racism and all that stuff, like, you don't come out the womb like that. It's definitely taught. So if you want to be open-minded, talk to your kids. Your kids have friends that are probably of color, and if they don't have friends that are of color and they're in a public school or in a public environment, maybe ask them why they don't. See if there's something wrong. See if there's an issue, because at the end of the day, that's what everybody's trying to promote. Like, you just want to be cool with people, whether you like them as a person or not. You can still show them some type of respect. So, you know, that's what I would say for people that want to do something different. Listen to your kids.
Well, Phil, I mean, I miss you. I know Mike hasn't seen you in a while.
I miss you.
it's been a minute for sure. I think we definitely have to do this Behind the Racket story for, you know, soon for no other reason than because of your hair, and that has to be promoted.
it has to be out there.
And people don't see it, and I understand you keep your social private and everything, but like, this has to be known. And you know, if there's something good gonna come out of this right now, we need some happiness. And that, look at this, it makes me smile. Look at this.
Yes, it's a big happy.
It's like this shaggy rug look. I love it.
It's just the way it is.
Wait. You know? You're talking about my mohawk, right?
The blue part.
The blue part.
Is it the blue part?
It's about 2 weeks. I got like really, really food sick last week, so I couldn't like re-dye it. Other than that, like, it would be totally blue right now.
I just want all the hatred in the world to turn on Mike and his hair. You know, if we could get anything out of this, center our hatred to a white man having a blue mohawk at the age of 40 plus.
Old white man. Yeah, that's the important part, the old white guy.
Living the dream.
I'm not saying it's a cure all, but it's a start. But Phil, thank you so much for coming out.
Of course, sir.
Tough times. We're here for you. Let us know if we can help in any way.
Thank you. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Shout out to Evan for sharing the story, getting the ball rolling. So
yeah, it was big of him to do that. So thank you again, and we'll hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, man. Hopefully see you guys soon. Stay safe.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology with its sleek mid-cut silhouette. It's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at Mike C. Tennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.